Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon and you are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and sideshow.com for everything else you might need. Hey, you can head up there. It's got a news category. It's got a little box down on the right-hand side. It says Patreon on it, where if you should have a crock of gold, we shall get to that in just a minute. You can donate some of your extra shekels to patron or to become a patron or Patreon of the show, because surprise surprise, the Sideshow is sponsorless. I know you would think with my dashing good looks that things may be a little bit different, but welcome to, I guess, that article that Conor Brophy wrote some time ago now in the Sunday Business Post. You can go read that in the news section of the Sideshow website when you're finished here, if you wish, or in fact whilst you're listening to this, but nonetheless, let's get to that dollar that you might be able to donate, and let's get to that crock of gold, because as you listen to this show, I am not in Dublin. In fact, I am not even in London. I am in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I am partway through the week of the Sideshow Live from Salt Lake City. The Sideshow within that has a small gaggle of events to get through, workshops. I have to do a talk. There has been an opening ceremony. I have had to cut a ribbon. I shall be this evening meeting former President of Ireland, Mary Robinson, where I will get to present to her, or to a member of the Hibernian Society in Utah, a piece of actual Blarney stone taken from the actual castle. A series of coincidences that have catapulted themselves together out of utter kindness. Whilst I'm also there, I should add, it was an absolute delight to arrive and to find that my good friends at Two Spots Coffee did in fact send across a couple of kg of very finely hand-roasted coffee blended specially for the Sideshow. And number two, about 5 or 6 Sideshow Two Spots Coffee mugs. Gentlemen, ladies, thank you so much. I should also add, whilst you listen to this, my good friend Peter Dowdall, who is also a former guest of the show, you all are nearly at this stage of the game, wrote a beautiful article in the Irish Examiner about 2 weeks ago now. And Peter, if you listen to this, thank you so much, my good man, because your closing lines really did mean a lot. And to you, to all of you, whether it's been on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or just by personal phone call, you're well wishes of support literally do mean so much. And the odd time you scratch your head and the odd time you have a good day in the sunshine, but behind the scenes, as you would well know from running a business, that although you might appear a little bit more in the spotlight, it's always the hard work, those other 51 weeks of the year where you're not dancing in the moonlight, as Tin Lizzy would have put it, where the hard work and the bit of slog, if you'll allow me call it that, needs to continue on. The time and place, even if you take it at that, when you consider that I have been on KRCL 90.9 with the punk rock gardener Aldine and Laura, the support they've got from Wasatch Community Gardens to King's English, the Hibernian Society, and also Bare Bones, and my good friend Chris, the legend from the I Am Salt Lake podcast. You wrap it all in together and you take this one person across the water who essentially, let's be frank about it, listened to the show and said, I like the cut of your jib. I like how you roll. I like how you dance. Dancing in the moonlight, we're back to it again. You should come across here and do that thing. So ladies and gentlemen, from Salt Lake City to wherever you are, to all of you who I have met whilst I have been here so far on this short little stint, those who have shared a pint of Guinness with me over the last many years of the Sideshow, to those who I bumped into in the St. Patrick's Day parade that I was in Utah, thank you so very, very, very much. If ever there is a day in the sunlight for the Sideshow, if you even read the about page, you'll understand that it is literally and entirely all because of you. From worm cakes to freely designed logos and borrowing leads and microphones and just being able to ask for that bit of advice, I am eternally grateful and thank you so much. Let's get on to today's show. And we have a gentleman by the name of Brian Granahan. Now, when you listen to this, wait until it gets to the good bit, because Brian is based in Skibbereen in Cork. He is one of the teachers at St. Patrick's Boys National School. He is from the same hometown as where my dad is from, my mom and dad. And Ireland, that is Portmarnock in North County Dublin. I was put in touch with Brian by Miriam and Bev of West Cork Garden Trail. And whilst there are school gardens on the go, and they do a really, really, really good job, and there is no questioning that, it's not until somebody turns around and plays a little bit maybe of the classical music or the rock and roll. Then you maybe in the 50s would have seen Elvis shaking his hips. You might have heard in the late 60s Sgt. Pepper's. You may have heard then, therefore, Welcome the Rolling Stones and Give Me Shelter. Might have been to the Led Zeppelins of this world. And then we hit the 80s and we kind of got a bit of Shakin' Stevens and it all went a bit pear-shaped. And we had Bross and Shania Twain. And you know where I'm heading with this. And it doesn't really work out too well. We also had a bit of Bowie in the middle. You got to give them credit where it's due. But when you take a school's garden that decides to grow tea in a town, in a country, in a county, in its own republic, where tea is famed. And I guess also in this, I could have followed on from last week's interview with Charlotte Harris with something that was, I guess, a little bit more Royal Horticultural Society Chelsea flower show kind of thing. But it is St. Patrick's Day, and this is a little bit Irish, and it's also extremely, extremely beautiful. And it is the ultimate in where there is a will and there is a way. And when you have that picture in your head, and when you decide to go along with that, and when you decide not to listen to the, well, it wouldn't it be easier or just quicker or faster if we did it this way? And it's kind of inspiring when you realize that sometimes you don't have to grow carrots. Again, nothing wrong with that. And sometimes you don't have to grow potatoes. But sometimes that little bit of thinking outside of the box and that being a little bit different is sometimes deserved of huge applause. Ladies and gentlemen, with thanks to the ladies and gentlemen of West Cork Garden Trail and to you for listening. This is Brian Granahan from St. Patrick's Boys National School in Skibbereen. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
So my name's Brian Granahan. I'm a teacher at Skibbereen, St. Patrick's Boys National School. Got involved in a project, school garden project, this year. Started in February. Basically incorporates a sensory garden along with the classes kind of learning about growing their own food as well. And each class has a raised bed to tend to. I suppose the centrepiece of the garden is geodesic dome that we had built. It allows us to kind of grow food throughout the school year. What I'd noticed with other school gardens, lots of stuff tends to happen when there's nobody around. So the idea behind having a dome was it would act as a place where we could get plants to fruit before the kids go on their holidays. It also, I suppose, doubles up as an outdoor classroom. We have teaching desk in it, and we have the raised beds are edged with wood that allows the children to sit down inside it. So it's like a classroom as well as a growing space.
There's two things in here, because the only other place that we've had on the sideshow before was the Grow Dome project in Rialto in Dublin, which you are aware of.
Yeah.
So number one, that makes you pretty damn cool as a guy who has the only other geodesic dome that we've ever had on the show. And number two, as a school, that kind of makes you pretty much the coolest teacher that I've ever met or known of, outside of the lead singer for Dire Straits, who was formerly a school teacher, but obviously left when he earned a few more bob.
Yeah, well, we think we're the first school in the country with a geodesic dome. You know, it certainly adds a lot to the school environment. And when people come in and they see it, they're pretty taken aback by it. And of course, the kids, they're pretty blown away by it too, you know.
Let's go to a slightly different place, because in school gardens, they tend to, and I'll play devil's advocate here, this isn't all of you across the board in brackets, but they tend to either flop spectacularly and therefore we've tried it so it'll never happen again, devil's advocate, close brackets. Or you get a group of, you know, really cool folks who want something to go extremely well because they're into it more so than anything else. That's not a degree and it's not an extra bit of paperwork. They just love that bit of growing stuff. Yours works obviously on the very spectacular side, but you do things extremely differently.
Yeah, well, we're trying to look at the long-term sustainability of the project, and I'm aware of that. I've kind of seen that happen with school gardens, that they kind of have this initial kind of, yeah, let's put in some raised beds and let's show the kids how to grow this and that. And then after a few years, it's kind of forgotten about, or it kind of falls by the wayside. But I think what you can do is you can kind of come up with a program that ensures the long-term sustainability of it by, you know, inviting people in to the space, finding out ways of using the space, you know, throughout the holidays as well, throughout the year, inviting people in from outside to kind of come and, you know, reignite that little bit of the interest that you had at the start and just bring it back up again. And that way, I think we'll be able to keep it going, you know, and that's the key, that we're kind of trying to see how can we maintain the level of kind of interest and excitement and enthusiasm that we've had, and to kind of, you know, really energize that going forward. I think we need to kind of make sure that the space is used by people and visited by people. That'll also make us keep on top of it. And you're not going to let your garden completely go to rack and ruin when you know that there's such and such coming to visit in 2 weeks' time. That kind of engagement with different elements of the community makes sure that, you know, we keep on top of it.
You came through the summer holidays of 2016. Yeah. I gather you did that quite successfully. And again, it's invisible negative stuff, it's not real. The possible questions, I guess, that may be raised to the what if this happens, if what if that happens, which makes it not negative, just so we're all on the same wavelength at home, folks. How did the summer go and how did you get that to work?
Well, the summer's going great because what we decided to do was we invited families from the school to take a week each and to maintain the garden for that week. So I put together a group of families who basically took a week throughout the summer, and they were all given a timetable, and during their week they were to go into the garden, open the doors of the dome in the morning if it was a hot day, make sure everything was watered, go around and tend to the different raised beds, harvest what was there, use what was there, and then we created a WhatsApp group so that everybody could keep in the loop. And it also meant that I was able to see that people were actually going in and doing their bits, show people what they've harvested, show people what they've used the produce for. So we've had bean curries, we've had like salads, we've had pictures of the produce that they've taken from the school garden shown up on the group so everyone can see it. And overall, like, the feedback has been great. Like, the families have really enjoyed going in there with their kids. Even though they had to go to school during the summer holidays, I don't think they minded.
Right, so I'm trying to pick an analogy because I obviously did the whole horticulture thing, and that's kind of, I won't say that's all I really know, but I'm trying to pick the deadliest music teacher when I was growing up, who didn't just teach you how to play GCD or no disrespect, but bodgy eyeing me on the tin whistle, and your mother is kind of going, Jesus, would you learn a new song or something else before I clatter you with the, it's a fictitious mom, as a, by the way, you know, she's, but you get what I'm kind of saying. You do need somebody who turns around and goes, listen, I'll teach you how to play Romeo and Juliet, Dire Straits in brackets, we're back to that analogy again. Then you go home and your dad goes, actually, that's pretty cool. Because you're not doing, it doesn't strike me anyway that you're doing the grow your own thing with, you know, at a very basic level here at all. And maybe that's just based on structure, but the structure already makes it pretty flipping cool, if I'm quite honest with you. Does that kind of make sense to you?
Yeah, well, like, I suppose the idea is that we're, you know, each class has a raised bed. The program that we're using is that junior infants will grow, you know, strawberries and sunflowers. And senior infants will grow pumpkins and first class will grow alliums and second class will grow something else, so that as they grow up, like go up through the school, they'll get a kind of wide range of stuff that they've had to plant, kind of done it by the families of plants. Gives them a kind of, I suppose, a good knowledge base going out of primary school. They will be people who kind of, some of them will take to it and do it down the line, some of them won't, but they'll all have kind of, oh yeah, I've planted them, you know, I've done that. And that'll kind of stand to them in the future, I think, because I've kind of noticed there are a lot of people who haven't ever tried to plant and tend to a plant and watch it come to fruition. So I kind of think if they have that going out of primary school, then they may not choose that direction down the line, but at least it'll be knowledge that they'll have and they'll be able to apply it in their lives.
You've obviously, based on what you're now saying to me, you had to kind of go and have a big group huddle with all of the other teachers and go, I have a cunning plan, Baldrick. Yeah. Here's what we need to do. And they obviously all went, Brian's the coolest dude on the planet. We're already in. Was it that simple?
Yeah, it was great. I mean,
it was that simple.
It was pretty good. I mean, the staff got behind it in a big way. They kind of, like, when we kind of decided we were doing this project, like, we put together a pretty good proposal. Like, we did get funding for the project as well, from the Gwendolyn Harold Barry Trust, and we put together a big proposal so people could see the vision behind it and what we were trying to do. And then we kind of put it to the staff. There's about 30 staff working in the school. We put it to the staff, like, who wants to get on board with this? And we had 12 staff volunteered to be on the gardening committee. So that's quite a substantial kind of ratio there. And what happens is twice weekly we have gardening club during lunchtime. So that has allowed us to get a lot of the work done, like the planting work, because even though it's a 20-minute slot, we take a group of 30 kids out or however many want to come out. They don't have to go out, but a lot of them choose to go out. So the teacher gives up their lunch break for that time, and we do a bit of work in the garden twice a week. And that has allowed us to do quite a lot. And then on top of that, each class was kind of given a growing project as well. So it meant that we were able to have a lot of stuff on the go. I mean, tomato plants, we grew tomato plants, and the boys all grew them from seed. During the lunchtime gardening club, we were able to pot on the tomato plants. We then planted them into the geodome, but we had loads of surplus plants, so then we were able to sell off a few of them to make money for the gardening project. So it kind of, it definitely made the whole thing possible by having the staff behind me, and the principal as well definitely was up for all the different things that we were trying to get done. Yeah, it's been great.
You're how long working in the school permanently?
Since last September.
Yeah, that kind of changes things a little bit in the, he's super cool, the department. I don't mean to make your head like huge entirely, but like in the back of my head, there's a lot of teachers going, I'm only here a short wet day or a bit longer than a wet day. I couldn't be doing X. But in theory, you kind of have, to me, as an outsider, made the possibly impossible, if that makes any sense to you, seem very extremely possible and logic.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, you kind of, I suppose, kind of have an idea, and then you kind of, it's all about timing as well, I suppose. I mean, we had this area of the school that was a bit of a bare patch. It was a concrete path through a cut grass area, and there wasn't a whole lot to look at or engage with for the kids. And I kind of had just come back from the Eden project, where I was just blown away, inspired, like probably the most inspiring place I've ever visited. And came away from there thinking, we have to do something. This is just amazing what they've done there. And I got it, like I completely got it. But I kind of talked then one day in the staff room about doing a garden out the back. And the principal said, oh yeah, are you up for a project then, Brian? And I said, yeah, I am actually. And he kind of then told me about a fund that we could apply for funding. So we put together a big proposal. Then we got parents who helped us draw out proper plans. We had a very good proposal put together. We had, again, the gardening committee assisted with all that. So it's like it kind of grew legs quite quickly. And then once we got the geodome up, it was like, yeah, we're here now. Right, let's get to it. And we've got a local VC horticulture course. They've given us some plants to grow in our geodome. So we're growing, currently we're growing rice in our geodome. We're growing tea. We're growing, we've got a banana plant in there. We've got a pineapple plant in there. Now, whether or not we'll get fruit from all of those, it remains to be seen. But you know what? We're giving it a go. We're experimenting like any gardener does. We've just planted a bed of carnivorous plants. So I think we've got an array of fly-catching plants that I think are going to really excite the kids, you know. Yeah, so it's exciting what you can grow in a geodome as well. And I think that's been part of it, to watch the speed of growth. We had some really fine weather back in May and June, and the temperatures in there were hitting up on 37, 38 degrees. And like you could practically sit back and watch the plants growing. I mean, we were coming in day on day, and you could see the progression. You could see the sweet corn was starting to develop and starting to send out all the different parts, and we had to pollinate that ourselves. It was like gardening on fast forward, and it was all happening, and it was happening in front of their eyes. So it was kind of exciting, and I think that was what was good about the idea of the dome, was that it really engages them. And I remember feeling like that after the Eden Project. That's open, 15 years? And I remember walking into the rainforest biome, and the growth is just unreal, like, because it's the perfect conditions for plants. It's got enough light, it's got enough heat. All you have to do is make sure it has enough water, and plants are happy.
Oh, jeez, do you know something? There's probably two things in here. I'd probably want to go back to school and want to go into school every day because of that. I mean, carnivorous plants, corn, tea, rice, just kind of makes me think of when Mam sent us to piano lessons. Sorry, Mam. And we didn't own a piano, and the teacher didn't know who the Beatles were, which possibly puts a lot in context. And I remember we had a vinyl player in our bedroom growing up, my older brother saying, "Don't mind that." And he put on Hendrix, and I went, "Jesus, that's unbelievable." And horticulture, let's be frank about this, can get a bit of a bad rap. Then you meet somebody like Brian, I'm freaking inspired because it's a rarity to meet somebody like you who turns around and goes, "Do you know what, it'd be brilliant if we did this," and you actually do it. And congratulations, because if I was 6, 7, 8 years of age and I could introduce any other child to a plant that ate rashers and insects and rice and tea, as versus, no disrespect, but begonias and carnations, there's a big difference between the two, and they're all good to me as a guy who studied hort, but one is classical and one is Led Zepp, if that's a fair analogy.
Yeah, well, I think I kind of was trying to think of ways that you can engage kids in gardening, and kind of certain things will work and certain things they won't be that interested in, you know. They kind of might regard it, but that's about it. But I kind of was trying to think of, obviously, plants that are kind of exotic and plants that they kind of, plants that move as well. I just planted a Mimosa pudica plant, which I remember encountering in Southeast Asia, and it's a touch-sensitive plant. So for a sensory garden, it made sense, but it's a plant that when you touch it, it just completely kind of operates a defence mechanism, and it kind of moves, all the leaves move and the branch moves down. I know it's going to excite them, because I remember my reaction to it the first time I saw it, and it just kind of hit home that plants are alive, like, and this is really happening, and I can't wait to see their reaction when they see that one now. Yeah, like, and then insect hotel, we have an insect hotel there. bugs, like, you know, and we're going to try and get a wormery as well going. And those are the kind of things that kids get really excited about, because they can see things happening in front of their eyes, and they can start to then make the links and appreciate the different elements and how they come together to make a garden, and how a garden is really a reflection of nature and the world around us. And we're basically trying to instill a respect for nature in them that they're bound to have if they're exposed to that kind of an environment through their schooling years. They're bound to come out with we're going to look after that. We're going to look after our environment and the plants, and kind of, we're going to be responsible about it, and we're not going to spray everywhere to keep certain things in check. We're going to do it in a way that kind of balances it all and means that all the elements, including the wildlife, are part of that. Even in the short few months that we've kind of created these little environments, like we have a wild path around the back of the school where we've just cut one path through and left the grasses and the wildflowers and stuff. And we've had like frogs, and we've had different birds that weren't spotted before come visit. And we need to start logging these more, because like it's actually we're attracting now the kind of things that are in their textbooks, that we're looking at a page and trying to tell them about this and that. And they're now visiting the school grounds because we've created the habitat for them.
Jesus, take all that in. Unbelievable, Jeff, to borrow the Sky Sports line out of it. I don't know what you say to that. I know Brian is sitting beside me, but let's be frank about this. We've had this on the show before. School closes for summer. Car park, patch of grass, cut the grass once every fortnight. That's it. Keep it trim and clean, spray it off. And then you see the far side, which is whatever the opposite of not inspirational is, then this is it right here beside me. People want to get in touch with you, and I gather you're going to have a bit of a response to that. How do they do that? Is there a place where they can go and see photographs? Or obviously don't phone you at like at 3 a.m. and they come out of the pub and go, I just heard this podcast.
I suppose the school has a Facebook page based in Skibbereen, and St. Patrick's Boys National School in Skibbereen, if anyone wants to get in touch.
The coolest dude in the planet award is just being handed to Brian. Thank you so much for your time. That was inspirational, a real pleasure and a genuine honour. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And that is it. We are all but complete and just about out of time. What can I say? But law, Eile Pádraic Sin a Dhiaidh, a very happy St. Patrick's Day to you all, irrespective of where you are. And although it is my first time away from home for this celebratory day, I'll still go back and say, you know, let's be frank about this. When my mom was around, it was a day for family, and it was a day for spending time together. It's a national bank holiday in Ireland, may not be in Salt Lake, but to be surrounded by those who mean so much to you on any day, or that one day, is kind of sacred. It's kind of not the worst place to be in the world. And for you to be by my side, even though I might be a little bit further away, for that I am eternally and always grateful. Thank you so much. Gurnu Muggins. Salam. Hugs Bats.
Well, Jimmy played harmonica, the pub where I was born. He played it from the night time to the pace of early morn. He soothed the souls of psychos and the men who had the horn. And they all looked very happy in the morning. But Jimmy didn't like his place in this world of ours, where the elephant man brought storm in his decks and he had too many pairs. So I sat to see the green.